Thank you for standing by. I would like to remind all parties today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect. You may begin at this time.
Thank you. Could we have a roll call?
Absolutely. Good morning, good evening to everyone. On today's call, we have Alan Greenberg, Michele Nalon, Helen Laverty, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Ron Wickersham, Tatiana Kramtsova, James Bladell, Shiva Mutusami, Ted Suzuki, Mason Cole, Paul Diaz, Elaine Doolin, Barry Cobb. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And apologies, we have Jeff Eckhaus, Sergei Gorbunov, Mikey O'Connor. And if I can just remind everyone, please to state their names when they speak. This is for the transcript purposes. Thank you. And I believe Michael Pelage has just joined as well.
Correct.
Thank you, Gisela. All right. I've decided to add to the agenda a review of the agenda, which we haven't had before. I had actually hoped to have a change for today, but I wasn't quite ready to do it, but I think it's good form anyway. If there are no comments on changing the agenda, I'll give you 3 seconds to speak up. We will just continue. We were partly through reviewing the public comments in our last meeting. Marika, has the form substantially changed for the part we already did to warrant going back over things at that point, this point, or should we just continue where we left off?
This is Marika. The only thing that has changed is that I've taken out the IPC comments so they can be grouped together with the other constituency statements, and they did confirm that that was their constituency statement, and I've added some more general comments like, you know, needs further discussion or some of the comments that were received during the call. So that's for people to review, and if they feel that I haven't captured discussion accurately, they, you know, you can just send a message and we can update that. But I'm not really sure whether we need to go over it because there are no conclusions that are being drawn or, agreement reached on any of these questions yet. So.
Okay, thank you, Marika. If I remember correctly, our general conclusion on most of the items was there was enough disagreement between in the comments that went along, in fact, with the discussion we had had, that all of the items do merit significant discussion by this group. And I don't think this, although the public comments have added some particular issues and examples, they have not indicated any reason why we should omit one of the items. My recollection is we got all the way down through question 5, which was the last one, but had not started on the general comments. Is my memory worth anything?
I think that was correct.
I was going to say, only that it fits with mine, Alan, which is, I think, worthy.
Okay. Marika, you were going to say something, I think.
No, I just was going to say that I thought you were correct that we left it at the general and other comments section.
Then I will turn the microphone over to you and to continue the review from the, in the general comments area.
Okay, so then basically all these comments are more individual issues or statements that I had difficulty placing in any of the other categories, so I would propose that we just go through them maybe one by one and see if there are any particular comments people would like to make or feedback people would like to give. So the first one relates to that it's ICANN's responsibility to ensure that registrars provide clear information regarding the expiry of registrations at the time of registration, as well as using warning reminder services as the expiration date approaches. ICANN should take responsibility for implementing the grace period by reserving expired domains for a minimum period.
Okay. Any comments on that? That is essentially saying that we should explicitly identify some minimum period at which things can be renewed, and essentially requesting specific consensus policy on this. Any thoughts? None? I think this is basically in line with what the original request for an issues report was requesting. And everyone seems to think this is a good idea in the absence of any other comments. Okay, let's identify this as something worthy of significant discussion and the direction we want to go in.
So the second comment here basically proposes to use a term of legacy registrants to distinguish between the registrant prior and after expiration. That's one of the areas I think the group has already covered with the RAE or RAE concept that the group developed at the beginning of the working group.
And unless I hear strong support for this in lieu of RAE, RAE, then we'll continue with what we decided. Next.
The next one is a comment pointing out that domain name warehousing is in a list of topics in the RAA on which consensus policies can be developed, making the point that there should be no ownership by registrars, no right to hold, no right to scuttle names away under aliases, and expression of opinion that any person that has lost a domain name due to expiration should be able to reclaim these names in a clear and concise ICANN policy.
Comments? Everyone on tranquilizers here?
No. I'm rebooting a whole computer to try and get back into an Adobe room, but I'll make net loud noises if I disagree with anything.
Thank you. Paul, you have your hand up.
Just a quick question, Alan. Any of these comments, our purpose now is just to go over them because they're going to get included into our first draft report. That was some confusion last week that in some cases where we're trying to divine input or intent on the part of the person, you know, we had difficulties. Are we just going to ultimately paraphrase these? Let's take the very last comment. You know, the person's talking about what could potentially be a consensus policy about warehousing, but there's nothing now that's not in our mandate, so we couldn't necessarily make... I'm just not sure what we're... what we're trying to do in going over all these comments right now.
These comments, to see if someone has great wisdom that we have missed or if there are issues that we haven't considered to date that members of the public feel are warranted. I'll take a moment before we go on to the next speakers on these items. On this particular item, I see two distinct statements. One is a statement about warehousing pointing out that it's something which could be eligible for consensus policy, and the second is that people who have lost domain names should be able to reclaim them. And I don't necessarily see those as overlapping at all. I think those are two completely separate issues, and I think would have to be looked at in their own right. The first, in my mind, is not necessarily, although it could be construed as part of this PDP, and the second definitely is. But we'll go on to the other speakers. James?
Yeah, hi, Alan. This is James, and I just kind of wanted to echo some of Paul's questions. I'm not really clear what we're doing in terms of if we were reading through the comments. I understand we're not, this isn't really the time to dive into these issues directly, but if we're attempting to categorize them somehow or map them to the charter questions or perhaps if, identify if we left something out of our initial discussion. So how are we dispositioning each of these comments?
I'll give you my answer, and I'm not sure it's the definitive one. My answer is I think we need to have gone through the comments in a conscious way so that later on, as we're deliberating, we are moderately familiar with them, can go back to them and as necessary. And if anything major is referenced in them that we haven't put in, this is an opportunity to think about it. So I don't think we are trying to do anything specific other than make sure we're aware of what the comments are and try to categorize them in our minds, if not formally. I'm not sure whether that makes it clear or not. Helen?
Yes, I just wondered if we could clarify a little bit. Any person that has lost a domain due to expiration should be able to reclaim these domains in a clear and concise ICANN policy. Are we specifying the number of days after expiration, or are we saying that that the registrar should go ahead and delete the domain as soon as it becomes expired? Currently, registrars have a variety of different policies. Normally, they will give 30 to 45 days to renew the domain. In some cases, they will give the registrant 30 days and then say they have the opportunity to sell it and auction it, which sometimes happens. I don't know whether these are covered in this, or are we going to say these should not be done?
Well,
we don't actually do either of any of these, but I know a lot of registrars do that, so it will affect registrars in that situation.
My position is the statement is clearly unclear, and I think we've already determined in the extreme 0 days is not enough and 4,000 days is too much, that someone shouldn't be able to come back 3 years later and say, oops, I lost my name. So,
surprisingly enough, registered.
I wouldn't be surprised. And I think it's up to this group to determine what, if any, mandated minimum time there is. So I think that's perhaps the main subject of the debates we'll be having in this forum. James?
Yes, and just a proposal or thought or suggestion would be that we would perhaps take a look at these questions and try to map them to the different categories that are outlined in our charter, and if they're not mappable to that, then we can kind of set them into a category on their own and say that these are issues that came up during the comments that were not easily addressed by charter questions. I think like we're missing an opportunity to maybe put some categorization around these comments.
Okay, so you're specifically talking about the ones that Marika did not categorize, that we should do our best to categorize them or reject them as being out of scope?
I think so, and I think, for example, and this is James speaking again, I think that we have, for example, the second one where the commenter offers up a new definition. I think that we've gone over this fairly early on in our work, and we've arrived at a definition to RAE, so maybe perhaps as a group we can say, no, we've touched on this, we have a working definition, and we're going to stick with that for the duration.
Okay.
And if there are any others like that that we feel that either have been obsoleted by our work to date or perhaps are just not relevant to what we're trying to discuss, but if they belong in another category, then I think that perhaps we should try and attach them to that at this point while we're going through this initial read-through.
Your comment is well taken. That's why we don't have only one person on these calls. I think we should go back and do that for the first one, which we didn't, and then go back to the third one. Siva had his hand up first, though.
May I speak now?
Yes, please.
This is on the window. It's 4 to 6 weeks a domain name is kept alive. This is too little time and does not work for everyone.
I'm sorry, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the time allowed to the time period for which a domain name is kept alive post expiry.
Sorry, can you say your name, please?
This is Shiva.
Here?
Yeah, this is Shiva.
Go ahead.
Okay. The time of 4 to 6 weeks is too little and it does not work for everyone. If we take an example, Hotmail or Yahoo, sometime back, 3 or 4 years back, required the users to log in once at least 45 days. Otherwise, the account was temporarily deleted. In practice, this was missed by several users, even by experienced users. Then when Gmail launched its email service, it specified this requirement as once in 9 months. So this is a clear indication that 4 to 6 weeks is too little, 45 days or 50 days.
Shiva, if I can interrupt, you're having this substantive discussion on what the delay should be, which is not what we're doing right now. Right now we are just looking at the comments and deciding, asking what they mean and saying how to categorize them. We will later go back and discuss what kind of policy we may want to come out of this PDP, if any.
Okay.
All right, if we can go back and do what James suggested, which I think is a good idea for the first one, the question is, does it fit into one of our particular categories or not? Marika, do you have any comments on why you didn't categorize it?
This is Marika, because basically it's a very broad statement, I guess, that can, you know, relate to several questions, because it talks about as well, you know, the warning reminder service that relates to the notice. It talks about the grace period, which I guess relates to the question on whether there's sufficient opportunity to recover a domain name following expiration. So I guess this is a general comment that might fit several of the questions.
Okay, so it's a global comment which covers many, if not all, of the agenda of the charter issues.
Yeah, I think at least question one and question three directly, in my view.
But Cheryl here, I'm not in the room, so I don't
okay,
have a way of putting my hand up.
Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Isn't there, remembering the columns, if I could see them, can't we just categorize it to 1 and 3 then?
We certainly can.
And,
Marika's problem was she didn't add categories. She put them into different sections of the spreadsheet.
Yeah, I
understand. And therefore
that,
didn't fit. I think we can easily categorize it into at least 1 and 3.
Hmm.
Or simply global.
And
James,
two
you
as well.
Sorry?
Yeah, this is James. And just so I wasn't, so Marika wasn't angry that I was creating additional work or criticizing the categories, I'd like to offer that particular question probably could be broken down into three component questions that can be added to question one, dealing with, I believe, it's adequate opportunity to recover. Question two, dealing with visibility in the registration agreement, and question three, which was discussing the notices and of upcoming expiration. So I think that this particular example can live in those three areas simultaneously. And if we encounter one of those, I think that the general rule is that these uncategorized comments either belong in one category, multiple categories, or no category, and I think it's really the last case that we need to identify and determine what we're going to do with those.
Okay, you're right, and I don't think we need to worry about the formatting right now of do we break it down into three sections and spread it over the others or simply annotate it as 1, 2, and 3. For our purposes, I think that they're equivalent. Barry?
Yes, I just kind of echo what James is saying. I'd even go to the point of breaking them apart as separate statements. I mean, because they are so broad and sweeping, there are three elements there that are not mutually exclusive. You know, they touch several boundaries across this whole element. So maybe we ought to look at just breaking them apart, and then it'd be easier to start classifying them as or breaking out the categories.
Okay, any other comments on this one before we go on back to the next one? Okay, with regard to the second one on the definition of legacy registrant, I think we have come up with an alternative term, and this one does not need to be considered because it was really just talking about the semantics that we're using in the PDP. The next one has two different sections, one on domain warehousing and the ownership by registrars, so to speak, and the other is that someone who has lost a domain should be able to reclaim it. The first one I would, before I make comments, we have hands up. James?
Yeah, you know, I'll go ahead and defer to McKelly on this one since I don't monopolize the conversation.
Okay. McKelly, go ahead.
Sorry, just putting myself off mute. It's a very broad statement, is the first thing I'd say. I categorize, like, the third part of it, any person who has lost a domain due to expiration should be able to reclaim these names in a clear, concise ICANN policy. Again, that's quite, I think that's too repetitive of some of the other comments we've seen. The bit, there should be no ownership by registrars. Was there further context to that, or was that the full comment?
I don't have the original ones in front of me. I don't know if Marika does or not.
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't have it in front of me, but all these are abstracts or part of comments. So it's important as well to review the full comment. I've tried to take out the most relevant parts, which I thought were relevant to the discussion of the group. But I would recommend anyone that has any questions to look back at the full comments as well.
Okay. I guess I'll leave it be then.
James, do you still want to get in?
Sorry, a little slow on the mute there. Just really quickly, I was probably echoing some of what McKelly has said, that I think that the second part of this comment, in the absence of context, but I trust in Marika's synopsis here, the second part of this comment deals directly with question one, which is the adequate opportunity to recover. The first part, domain name warehousing is addressed in the RAA. I think that, I would think that is taking us down one of the off the beaten path a little bit if we say that any attempts by registrars to, make a name available for the RAE after a name has expired, is that what is being swept up in the generic definition of warehousing? Do we need to define that, or is that just simply something that's a tangent to the conversation that we're trying to have? And I pose that question to the group.
I can try to, in the absence of any hands up, I'll try to address it slightly. The first statement is just a statement of fact, and I don't think we can argue with that. The next statement talks about ownership, which, of course, is not quite the right word in regard to domain names, but implies that registrars should have no rights to take control over domain names in the interim period, which, of course, is not necessarily the same as warehousing. And so I think the latter half of the statement of what rights do registrars have in the use of the domain name post-expiration is something we will be discussing, although I hope we will not get into the issue of warehousing as such, because I think that is way outside of our domain. Barry, you have a comment?
I was just going to say, my limited understanding of the entire market space across registrars is still somewhat limited and learning more every day, but, I'm starting to understand that there are people out there that make themselves a registrar because they own a pool of domains, and that's how they choose to manage that portfolio or something along those lines. And I'm not saying whether this is the right or wrong way to go, but, taking that comment, should there be no ownership by registrars or no rights, wouldn't that be like a very large market space game changer for X number of registrars out there that are accredited?
I would guess it would be if we were to go in that direction. I mean, just like registries are prohibited from owning names other than the ones that they need for running their business, one could imagine that such a rule could be created for registrars. I think that's a little bit far out of the scope of this particular PDP.
Right, okay. So, then those kinds of comments should probably be scratched from however we plan to proceed with them, because they're, that's a pretty big one there, and I'm not sure. I agree, it's just not really in scope.
I would tend to agree that the second sentence as phrased, part of it is, at least part of it, is well out of scope. Ron, have your hand up?
Yes. This is Ron Wickersham. Mike, could someone define in this context what the commenter meant by warehousing? Or is that a generally understood term here?
I'll let the professionals in the business answer that. I know what my answer would be, but if there's someone who's in the registrar business like to comment, Michele?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, it's, some of the registries have definitions, and I'm talking about CCTLD registries, would have definitions of what they understand warehousing to mean. But that doesn't mean that a member of the general public would use the term correctly. I mean, I constantly see people referring to cyber squatters when the reality is that somebody just registered a domain before they got there. So, you know, without having a clear context of what exactly the person was referring to, I would personally think that the term isn't that clearly defined. I mean, we could, as a group, could define what we understand warehousing to be, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the person submitting the comment have the same understanding.
Michele, I have a question for you. Are there any of the definitions of warehousing which you would think are clearly under our scope or within our scope?
Being perfectly honest, not really, no.
Okay.
In my own personal view, I can't speak for James, Paul, Mason, or anybody else. But being personally, I think it's far too easy for us to end up getting completely distracted by things that maybe they might be worthy merit discussion within the ICANN community, but they're not. This entire thing we're working on, from my understanding, is to make sure that a normal registrant is not screwed over, use simple, clear terms, is not screwed over by a registrar, and that they're afforded a fair and equitable chance to renew their domain name, and, you know, that they don't lose their domain through, and if they lose it through some mistake on their own part because they didn't bother paying the bill, because they ignored all the things, none of us are going to change that. But broadening the scope to include other topics that people may find interesting, I think it's not going to help anybody. It's just going to cause headaches and distraction. We should need to keep the focus as clear as possible.
I don't think anyone's arguing with you.
Okay. There's a virtual agree. If I was in the room, there would be an agree next to my name, Cheryl here.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl.
Okay, I think that one could argue that if we could eliminate warehousing in its widest possible form, that it would go a long way to fixing the problem we're looking at. But that's an awful wide broom to use to address the particular problem we are looking at. So it's a rat's hole, which I don't think we want to go down, but I appreciate any other comments. There were a bunch of hands that have since disappeared, so everything has been said. Do I interpret that properly? Okay. So if I can try to summarize the statement about warehousing being a subject eligible for consensus policy is true, but not necessarily one that we want to do anything about. The no ownership without qualification is too wide a statement. Again, it's not within our domain to say whether registrars are allowed to own or not. The second half of that sentence in the summary, implying that registrars should have unilateral rights to own domain names post-expiration, is something that we will be discussing and the last part of the statement essentially maps to question number one in that is there adequate opportunity to reclaim domain names. Not seeing any hands and not being able to say that again, I'll take that as we all have the same understanding. Marika, I now turn it back over to you. This is going to be a slow day. It started off with two bad jokes and email, and it's getting worse.
I think someone just has raised their hand. So,
Ron.
Yes, Ron Wickersham. I think we can understand the commentator's position was not to say that as broadly as a registrar should not own their own domain names that they themselves register, but he's talking about owning it in the post-expiration context. So to dismiss it as saying it's too broad, I don't think covers what he intended to say.
I don't.
This is Marika. If I can maybe just read out, I have the comment in front of me, the specific part that relates to this, I might clarify something.
Go right ahead.
That would be very helpful, Marika. Thank you.
He basically starts up saying, well, maybe I can just post it in the chat room. It's maybe easier than me reading it out. I'll read it out as well, but I'll put it there as well so those that are on Adobe can read it. So he basically says, ICANN adopted statutes specifically directed at domain name warehousing 4.1, which don't appear to have ever been levied against any registrar. And he quotes, at the end of the redemption grace period, is the domain name permanently removed from the registry database and made a part of the pool of available names, end quote. The RP appears to be no mention of the full expiration process, especially prior to the grace period. Then he continues going on about, you know, there shouldn't be no ownership. Registrar should act transaction facilities that are not banks or rental agencies in any manner. So he continues, and he mainly relates to the ownership issue in the rest of his comments.
Okay. To comment on Ron, I don't think what I said in my summary was the same as what you said. I said that the statement that registrars should have no ownership rights is too wide a statement for this group to look at. However, the second half of the statement in the summary on what rights the registrar should have post-expiration is something that we will be discussing.
Good. Thanks for that clarification.
Okay. Helen.
Yes, I'm just wondering why we have the word ownership in. It was my understanding that nobody ever owns a domain name. You can have rights to it for up to 10 years, but ownership isn't actually.
As someone who actually uses that term on occasion when I slip, and I do regularly, I think anytime we use the word ownership, we really mean to say is the registrant of a name.
Exactly, but I think it's confusing bringing in the word ownership, and even the word warehousing is also confusing because it has different connotations. I'd really prefer to see both of those words removed so that inferences will not come in from.
To the extent that we cannot change the comment that someone made, I think in any public documents that we produce, we need to make sure that we don't use the word ownership.
Yes. Thank you.
I'm afraid in conversation we will likely continue to use the word. I'm not sure we can change that.
I think all of us understand what it means.
Yes.
But what you said by the documentation is exactly what I'm concerned with. We should avoid those words in documentation because other people may misconstrue our meaning.
And we trust you'll keep us honest.
We'll try.
Cheryl, can I put my hand up in a virtual world?
You can. James is first, then you.
Thank you.
Hi, Alan. This is James. I just wanted to say that was that the previous speaker, Helen? I agree with that suggestion that we while we should not be editing comments, perhaps if we do detect something that where terminology is stretched a little bit, we can put the original word own or ownership in brackets, because we kind of know that that's probably a misappropriation of that term. And I think that we could probably say the same about warehousing, since we don't really have a definition as it pertains outside of the RAA, or as it is applicable to this particular group, because to me, warehousing is not a small number. Warehousing is also not a temporary stepping stone into a disposition of a name that has expired, whether that's to the RAE or to another party. So I just feel like I'd like to agree with Helen's suggestion, and suggest also that until we have a better understanding of what this particular commenter was looking for, we should also put the name warehousing in quotes, because I'm not sure how that applies here.
Okay, we will seek counsel from those who have done this before more than I certainly have about how to handle these semantic issues to make sure that we're not passing on any incorrect connotations in our reports.
Cheryl?
Yes, Cheryl.
Thank you. A perfect segue to exactly what I want to say. Having been doing this in a CCTLD environment for some time now, where we constantly need to retrain and re-educate and nurture our understanding from the registrant's point of view of the whole landscape, two things came to mind. First of all, that we need to be extraordinarily careful what gets promulgated in documentation. So it was, you know, in absolute agreement, and of course the use of a glossary and some definitions as a main part or a standing part of any documentation that comes from the work group is the way I would be proposing we approach it. And the second one is to put on the potential to-do list to, as I think Kelly has said a number of times, you know, somewhere in this process we need to do some education, who does it, how and when and why, of the internet end user who becomes a simple internet end user who wishes to become a domain name registrant, and help them learn what the hell they are actually contracting to do with people, which is license something. And that license needs to be maintained under certain criteria, including accurate who is information and contacts, etc., etc. So that sort of needs to be on the back burner and may or may not be something we ever comment on, but we have to be real careful about making sure we use proper words and glossaries and meanings and just keep pushing out the correct information, because it's the only way you change people's usage and understanding. Hand down.
Michael Pelage.
Just with regard to changing the commenter's wording and stuff like that, I agree on the legal definition of ownership, and you know, but I still think we need to caution before we start changing people's words, because there are some people that have argued in court, for example, in the sex.com case, in which the Ninth Circuit said it is possible for there to be an ownership interest. So before we start changing people's words, I just want to urge caution on that. So I would argue that not only with the ownership, but also with regard to the warehousing. If that is what the commenters have said, you know, I think we need to have the record reflect what they said before we start imputing different interpretations on their comments.
And I would suggest we may need a very small preamble to these comments when we publish them. Marika?
This is Marika, because my suggestion would be something that we've done as well in some of the previous comments, like to have in the third column the opportunity to make those kind of notes, saying, well, the working group questions whether ownership is the appropriate term or not. The working group discussed, you know, what the definition of warehousing would be in this context, as the commenter did not provide any definition, to raise those issues in this document so that it is documented that, you know, the group raised some certain questions on the different comments, but not necessarily changing the comments that people have made, because I agree there with Michael, this is what people have put in, and I don't think it's for the working group to change those. They can question and discuss them and maybe put them in context, but I think we should be careful in trying to change people's words.
Hand up again. There's no way you can change people's comments. Their comments are their comments are their comments. All you can do is establish clear and agreed guidelines and nomenclature with a set of understandings or definitions associated with it.
And this is James. I just want to clarify that I, for Mike and for Cheryl, that you know, I think I used the word that, you know, let's put them in brackets or parentheses or something to call attention to the term, but not necessarily make any edits or revisions to the original comment. I just wanted to be clear.
In reply to that, Alan, there's nothing faster to get someone's backup than telling them they're wrong, they don't understand what they're talking about, or they don't know the language you should use. So the comments are simply individuals' comments, and however they are listed and promulgated, people can look up the archives and their raw data will be there. What I'm saying is the output of the work group needs to be clear. It's always real handy to have proper definitions or agreed definitions in documentation.
I would suggest that we understand the issue right now. We don't need to come up with the details of how we format the final documents. And Marika has just volunteered to do a significant amount of work in creating the output of this work group that I think we should accept willingly and go on. Michael, you still have your hand up. Was that a remnant?
That is a remnant. I will resolve.
Okay. May we go on to item number 4?
The next commenter suggests that resellers may have an incentive to let domain names expire since they have or they can get a cut from the auction proceeds.
Which applies, I would think, to the statement of adequate opportunity and perhaps adequate notice.
And maybe as well, question 2, whether the provisions are clear enough?
Yes, certainly. Helen.
Yes, I think as far as resellers, didn't we already discuss that this was really beyond our scope? The resellers are under the jurisdictions of the registrars, and the registrars are ultimately responsible for resellers.
We did say that. This is a statement that a comment was made, and I think it falls if you group the resellers as an arm of registrars, which may not be legally the case, but in terms of the process, then the statement applies to registrars.
But are we going to give resellers a legal distinction from the registrar that they're under?
They already have a legal distinction in that they are now defined and referenced in the current RIA, or the new one that came into effect in May. So the concept of a registrar is enshrined in the ICANN contracts, including a definition of it, and with explicit responsibilities for resellers, which may have been implicit in law anyway, but are now being made explicit. So we might, in the end, recommend that additional things be made explicit, for instance.
So in certain
I'm not sure it applies in this case.
The registrar is not responsible for the actions of their reseller.
No. The current RIA, I wasn't part of the negotiating team on that. Maybe someone who was could comment. I know Tim isn't on this call. Mason is. But my understanding was this. The inclusion of the reference to resellers was not necessarily a change in law or in contractual requirements, but an attempt to make things more visible and make it clearer that resellers are not exempt from those terms. And there were some people who were claiming they were.
Okay, I just wondered whether it's appropriate for us to comment on this because it's...
I think there is a precedent now that resellers are allowed to be mentioned. It would not be inappropriate. James?
Yes, thanks. This is James, and I'm just trying to get my mind around how this could be possible and then how this would work in practice. And then I'm asking the folks who part of the at-large or even some of the other registrars on the call, I mean, do we know how this could work, or
can you define this? I'm sorry.
This arrangement, this resellers getting a cut from auction proceeds by letting domain names expire. I just want to know, is this occurring?
Well,
it just seems like a strange statement to make, that it's a hypothetical thing that could be happening, or is this something that, you know, yes, we, it's notoriously a problem.
In light of what Helen said, if we simply consider registrars an arm of resellers and in our minds rephrase the statement, it said registrars may have a vested interest in allowing domain names to expire because they make money off of it. And that, in fact, can be true. So whether it's the resellers who take a cut or the registrars who make a profit from auctioning or selling a domain name, that may, in fact, be true. I don't think anyone's denied that. But I don't know if that helps your question. Michele?
Just reading the full comments. The comment is from the editor of Domain Name Wire. And the full comment is, excuse me, resellers may have an incentive to let domains expire since they can get a cut. It is normal practice for domain registrars to auction off expired domains, and I have no problem with this. Most of these registrars still make best efforts to inform customers of renewal dates. I do have some concern with resellers, especially since some registrars compensate them with a portion of auction revenue. I mean, that's the full context of the comment. Speaking as a registrar and as a reseller, well, with my registrar hat on, it's not something that would be of any interest. We wouldn't have any interest in doing it. And with my reseller hat on, it wasn't something I ever had the opportunity to take advantage of.
Is that sour gravy?
Being bluntly honest, and just in terms of general business practice, I don't know if people do this. If they do, I don't know how they get away with it. I mean, from our perspective, every time a domain expires that the registrant didn't want to expire, it causes me massive headaches. So I can't see how any right-minded individual running any form of business in this sector is going to do that. I mean, okay, sure, there may be some nut jobs out there who do it and seem to enjoy playing with lawyers, but it's a strange one. And it'd be interesting if there was more, if people had tangible proof, but it sounds to me like a comment. Because, I mean, if you read even the wording, resellers may have an incentive. It's not clear that they do have an incentive, nor is it clear that it is actually happening. So, I don't know. It's a very odd comment.
Paul?
Yeah, just to follow on, I appreciate that Michele read the whole thing out because, I mean, Andrew Alleman is certainly a well-noted and savvy observer of the domain name industry, so understanding the complete comment, two thoughts. One, for Network Solutions, he's actually got it all backwards. I mean, the way we do our auctions is that we make a portion of the proceeds of auctions available to the RAE. So, you know, this idea we don't incent resellers to withhold names from somebody and then so that we can cut them in. I'm unaware of the practice and, you know, would like to see an example, not that this becomes another urban myth that we're chasing after. The other thing is, very importantly, however we're ultimately going to recognize in our reporting the efforts that we're doing now, looking at all of these various inputs, and totally agree from previous experience, it's so important to make it clear to the rest of the community that working groups did fully take on board all inputs. It's very important that we understand the full context of what was said. Normally the summaries have been great. Marika, it's not a dig on you in any way, but this particular paraphrasing of the comment was actually somewhat misleading. I think we all kind of owe it to ourselves, this effort overall, to be very careful and certainly not to start putting words in people's mouths. For instance, we can't say, well, we think he means insert registrars where he said resellers and therefore it's true. That's not what was said and not what even was paraphrased. So let's just be very, very careful with this.
I have a question before I go on. Given that you say the author of the comment is well-respected, would you have any problem with staff going back to him and asking if he has any particular examples?
I think that would be a great idea. I mean,
which
this,
he may not
a member
be,
of the community.
He may not have been willing to put in a public comment.
Mm-hmm.
Being,
I mean, if he's
being
aware
allergic,
of something.
Being allergic to lawsuits, but nevertheless.
Sure, but in his connections within the industry, maybe he can highlight for us an actual example of this happening, so that it is no longer an urban myth.
Or perhaps examples of other things as well. I think we should take that under advisement and see if we can do that in a proper and discreet way. Mason, I think Mason was next. I've lost track.
Yeah. I just wanted to echo a bit what Paul said. I think the statement that a reseller could, and therefore a registrar could, be incentivized to let a name go and therefore realize auction revenue shouldn't translate into would do it or is doing it. This question came up, I specifically remember, as far back as about 2003 at a conference, and I remember several registrars making the distinct point that, and I may have brought this up on another call, that the cost of pursuing and acquiring and successfully maintaining and servicing customer relationships on the part of a registrar, given that the marketplace is so competitive in terms of price for registrations, that as a general statement, registrars would be foolish to sacrifice a long-term relationship for the sake of one-time cut of some auction revenue. Now, it may be that has happened once or twice, or even more often. I'm unaware of it if it has happened, and I certainly have no objection to asking Andrew. I agree with everyone else. I work with Andrew often, and he's very well informed, and I respect him a great deal in his journalistic approach. I want to be careful again that one example does not a trend make, but if there is a demonstrable trend or demonstrable trend that should be addressed, that's a different matter. So I want to make sure that we just carefully parse exactly what we're looking at and decide whether or not a resource has to be devoted against something that is a once or twice occurrence or is a trend of actual harm that's developed or is developing in the marketplace.
James?
Yes, real quickly, I want to say that McKelly, Paul, and Mason either echoed what I wanted to say or even said it much better. But there was one final point that I wanted to throw out there, which was the idea that in order for a reseller to be, as they're perceived to be, some sort of a middleman, there has to be some degree of control. And I think that this comment might be presuming that a reseller can block notifications for renewal from going out to the RAE, or may be able to somehow insert themselves into taking control of that name before it goes back to the parent registrar. And I guess I just don't see that as being the way that would work in the real world. And for example, I'm thinking of a hypothetically unscrupulous registrar would probably, if they're willing to jeopardize their clients like that, they're probably willing to do the same to their resellers as well, to some extent. So I just wanted to put that out there. To be an effective middleman, you have to have some degree of control or leverage, and I don't think that resellers have that to that extent. So I'll lower my hand and defer to the other points.
I would say that there are examples of registrars who do give their resellers that amount of latitude. Helen?
Yeah, I actually just wanted to clarify my statement before. There was a suggestion that I meant to reword it by saying registrars may have the incentive to let domain expires instead of resellers. What I was actually intending to mean was that registrars have the responsibility to control their registrar. So the statement seems to imply that resellers, as James was saying, would not actually want to send out renewal notices to their registrants, and as McKaylee was saying, that's a real headache. If domain expires and the registrant didn't want it to expire, they get pretty livid. So you tend to want to make sure this happens. So if the reseller is not sending out adequate notices and the registrar finds out about it, the registrar will basically need to tell the reseller, get your act together or we will have to take over for you. It's actually very important that registrants be informed of this information. So I'm just trying to make sure that we understand that the wording was not saying that registrars may have this incentive to do it. Maybe some do, but this is unrelated. I'm just saying that registrars would probably try to prevent retailers from making doing that sort of action.
Mason, do you have your hand up again, or is that from before?
Nope. Sorry. I'll take it down.
All right. A couple of comments. Not wearing my chair's hat on several things that people have said. There have been a number of references to the statements similar to this or related to this have been made before, and various people have stood up and said, I wouldn't do that, that would be stupid. I would hazard a guess that the people who do it don't stand up in public meetings and say, I do it. If this was deemed generally to be something which was shady and not the most honorable of business practices, you won't get a lot of people standing up and saying it. That's number one. Number two, we also make a lot of statements here on registrars and presumably resellers can have their own business models, and that's all well and good. Well, everyone's business models may not be the same, and there may well be people who have business models where their aim is to get good names and then use them for other ways, regardless of how much that upsets the customers who came up with the name to begin with. So I don't think we can make generalizations that everyone is honorable and everyone thinks from the customer's point of view. The world just isn't quite that nice. Any other comments on this point before we go ahead? I think the summary of this...
Can I just put my hand up very briefly? Cheryl here.
Yes, certainly.
And just to fit in with what you just said, but also to come back with something Mason mentioned, and that is, you know, one or two incidents and it's not a trend make. From my CCTLD experience, where we do have a domain name industry code of practice that was wrought from a shared experience between the supply and the demand side of our market, and it is an enforceable code of practice. We have, in fact, gone back and changed the rules only once, and that was only because of what one black hat was doing. But it was giving the industry a little bit of a bad reputation and confusing and indeed misleading our registrants in our community within the .au space. And so it only took one incident, albeit a fairly wide and rather nasty one, for us to go back and change a loophole in what was an established industry code of practice. That simply makes everyone have greater faith, trust, and an inherited set of security and stability in the code of practice and the industry within the space. So sometimes it's not a waste of resource, but we certainly do need to keep our eye on what this group is chartered for.
Thank you, Cheryl. McKelly?
Sorry, just coming off mute. Now, just with all due respect, Alan, I mean, I'm sorry, but the reality is this, okay, the internet industry involves thousands of different companies of all shapes, sizes, and they all may or may have different business models. The new version of the RAA has been signed by the majority of registrars, which account for the majority of domain names. As you rightly pointed out, people who may be bad actors aren't going to stand up in a public meeting and say, oh yeah, I'm a really bad actor and I love to screw over my registrar. Obviously they're not going to do that. However, I think there's a danger that entertaining a lot of, oh, it could be possible, it might be possible, oh, lots of things could happen. It broadens the scope of this far too much. I mean, the reality is we as a group can only deal with things that we can actually see, that we have proof of them actually happening. Secondly, if you look at the registrars that are involved in this process and who are within the registrar constituency, they account for the vast majority of domain names that are registered on a day-to-day basis. So I go back to the same thing that I've said again and again, and I think Cheryl's backed me up on this. End-user education is probably the thing that people should focus on, and worrying about, you know, a possible business model that may or may not exist is not actually going to help anybody, because until such time as somebody can bring us tangible proof of this happening, we're wasting time and energy looking at it, whereas there are things that could possibly come out of this that can be put out through large organizations such as GoDaddy, through the ALAC, through whatever, and that would have a positive impact on a larger number of registrants. And ultimately, that's all we can do. We can't expect to deal with every single possible edge case imaginable, because to do that is just beyond the scope of normal human beings. I'm sorry, and I just think it's we need to focus on what we can actually deal with. I mean, this entire thing about people having an incentive to let domains expire, I mean, I find the entire concept laughable. I mean, earlier this year we had a software issue involving one of the ccTLDs that we deal with, which resulted in a domain dropping for a client. It cost us thousands to get the domain back, but ultimately we'd screwed up. And that's the thing. I mean, ultimately, if we lose a client due to some kind of screw-up, it's going to cost us a hell of a lot more than any possible benefit we could gain from getting involved in those type of things. And I'd say the same is going to be true for the vast majority of people. So really, I think it's just a ridiculous thing to entertain.
James?
Yeah, thanks. And I mostly agree with McKelly and what he's saying. I think that in this particular question, I would say that a bad actor registrar is just as likely to take advantage or exploit their reseller network as they are their customers, because they probably don't make a huge differentiation between the two groups. So I wanted to get that out there. And then the second thing is to discuss the different aspects of this particular question and how it might fit into our charter, because I think when we go down some of these topics, we start to color way outside the lines, and I just want to bring the focus back into those questions and whether or not this can be categorized as is someone receiving adequate notice, and do they have adequate opportunities to recover a name once it's expired.
I'm sorry, are you suggesting that we do categorize it like that or we do not?
Well, I think that
I'm just not sure I know what you were saying.
Yeah, I think that there are elements of overlap between this particular question and those two charter questions. However, the commenter, I believe his name is Andrew, I can't remember his last name, threw us a little bit of a curveball here by introducing this idea that there are bad actor resellers, which implies bad actor registrars. And while I admit that it's possible that they are out there, unless, you know, that there's some quantifiable examples of, you know, that, I mean, I'm not sure how to go about solving something that I don't quite understand how it's happening. I'll just lay it out that way.
Any other comments on this one? I will agree that I do not think that the rationale of why someone does this is a major factor in our deliberations. The real issue is it happening and do we need to stop it?
That's exactly right, Alan. This is James again. I think motivation is probably what's confusing me here. It could be negligence or it could be malice. You know, I think let's address what is or isn't happening as opposed to what is causing someone to behave.
And I think I believe that is all we can do.
Right.
So this is Marika. Just to confirm, would the group like me to go back to the commenter to ask him if he has specific examples in relation to this comment?
I think
go ahead.
This is Mike Pelage. We have people that have commented. I think if we want to find out, let's go back to them. They've already come forward. If they have examples that could help us continue with the fact-finding or dispelling the urban myths, let's do it. I think that would be a constructive use of time instead of, you know, trying to go fishing. We have people that have stepped forward. Let's go to them.
Yeah, I would see no reason to restrict to just this particular comment. If he's someone who is well respected and has a good feel for what's going on in the domain industry, I think it's someone that we should talk to. And maybe the group wants to call him in general. But first of all, perhaps a conversation between Marika and this person should be the first step. I don't see any reason to limit it to this particular question if the person is indeed knowledgeable and well-respected. Michele, you have your hand up.
Well, just say, I mean, if Mason, for example, says he knows the guy, and Marika may not know him, I don't know whether she does or not, a logical thing would be just for Mason to reach out to him if he was willing to do so. I mean, Mason, are you willing to do so?
Happy to.
I would suggest Mason make the connection, but let the interview be done by someone who's not on either on one side of this debate or another.
Well, sorry, with all due respect, that wasn't what I was getting at. It was just simply a case of Mason. If Mason has a personal relationship with somebody, you can easily ask them to give some feedback. I mean, it's not a question of one side of an argument or another. I mean, it's just a simple question of, you know, if you have a relationship with somebody, it's easier to initiate a dialogue.
Yeah, and my comment is I would prefer that Mason does the introduction, but the dialogue happen with staff.
I'm happy to do it either way, and conduct the. But I'll do the outreach, and I could even talk to him without biasing his opinion. But whatever makes this group more comfortable, I'm happy to do.
I don't think we're talking about happy. I think what we're talking about is maintaining the neutrality of this. And
I understand where you're going, Mike. I understand where you're going.
Yeah, and I just agree with Alan. So.
Ellen.
Actually, I just agree with McKaylee. I think if he knows Mason, Mason can talk to him and make the initial contact and see whether he can clarify it without going further. If he can clarify it easily, then I'm happy with that. If Mason thinks that he needs to bring this guy in to talk to the rest of us or to talk to somebody else who is unbiased, that, again, is something he can determine. In other words, it might just be a simple question that he can clarify without going to this much trouble.
Well, my point was, I think this is wider than just this particular question, and this may be one of the when we're in the process of defining how PDPs get carried out, and one of the issues that's been brought up and supported by everyone is, should PDP working groups be allowed to go out to outside experts and talk to them? And there has been a strong yes, and I think we may have identified one such expert, which is why I was suggesting that we approach it from the point of view of the work group talking to him, either with the staff doing the contact, or perhaps actually coming and talking to the work, that we treat it as more than just a clarification in this particular case.
Yes, that is a good idea. I agree with that, but my point was that Mason could talk to this expert, seek clarification, and see whether he would be interested in participating further. He may say, I don't want to.
And
in which case, Mason can give it back to us and said, here's my clarification. He doesn't really want to get further involved. He's got, you know, a life or something.
And I think that's exactly a reasonable extension of what I said. If Mason initiates the contact, if the answer is hanging up the phone, I don't want to talk to anyone, then so be it.
But he may be willing to clarify his point at the same time without saying it. Just he doesn't want to get any further in. Here's my clarification. Go ahead and use this. No, I don't want to get any further involved. And that may happen that way, and it's still a good result.
Okay. I think we're not going to come to closure on this, and I don't think it's worthy of taking a vote on as our first vote in this group. So can we leave it to Mason and Marika to come up with some reasonable way to handle this?
Sure.
I'll be glad to be in the middle of that also.
I'll be quite happy with that, too.
Okay, next point. We may actually get to 4 or 5 points before we finish the meeting. Marika, back to you.
Yeah, so the next comment was made by Christina Rosette, and it's an issue that has been raised in the group before, discussed in the group before. She puts forward a scenario in which a registrant explicitly requested the cancellation of a domain name, after which the registration was removed from the control panel of the registrant, but the domain name actually was not deleted, and WHOIS data was left unchanged, as a result of which the registrant was contacted, I think, with a cease and desist order, because he was infringing someone's rights while, in his view, he had cancelled the domain name. So I think a question has been raised before, should this scenario fit within discussions of an expired domain name, or is this something that lies outside of the group's remit?
I believe we asked a question on the registrar survey about this, about whether registrars treat request to delete as an early expiration or not, and I think we defer any further discussion of this one until we get an idea of what the answers are to that. If registrars all treat it as a different type of occurrence than an early delete, than an early expiration, then it, I believe it is not within the remit of this group, and vice versa. Any comments on that before we go ahead? Okay, next, Marika.
The next one is a comment.
Kelly, did you want to get in? Nope.
I mean, no, I think just go leave us, fine.
Okay.
Okay, the next one is a comment made by WIPO, and there's some others made by WIPO further down the list, but I thought it related to a certain extent to Christina's comments, because they basically indicate that WHOIS records do not indicate whether a registrant has requested a deletion of a domain name, which might mean that a complainant in a UDRP proceeding will not be able to exercise its rights under paragraph 3.7.5.7 of the EDDP.
Thoughts from people on how we treat this?
Alan, this is Mike Palage. I previously raised my concern on numerous other calls regarding the inaccuracy of WHOIS data during this change of status and how that impacts a registrant's ability to potentially recover a name. And also potentially impede with the ability of third parties to enforce trademark rights. So I personally endorse and support WIPO's comment that was submitted, and I believe it's consistent with points that I've articulated previously.
If I can try to translate that in, if I remember the various comments, would you be satisfied with a situation where WHOIS reflects who actually has control over the domain name? That is, if the registrar has in fact taken control over it, WHOIS points to them. If it's the registrar still, if the belief is that the registrant, the RAE, still has virtual control over it, it should point to them. Does that address the needs? I'm not saying whether that change should be allowed, but would that address the needs in terms of accuracy of WHOIS? Michael?
Possibly. And again, Alan, what I want to do is I want to go back, and this is maybe something you and I could discuss offline, you know, to allow this call to go forward, but the point I have tried to raise from day one is, in order for a domain name to appear in a registry database, there needs to be a contract. And who is the contracting party with the registry that allows that name to exist? And that's why I believe the accuracy of WHOIS records are very important and are tied to the ability of a registrant to recover a name. So, again, just to go through these scenarios, let me review some of the points that I've previously raised, and perhaps this is something you and I could discuss offline, and perhaps next week, or not even next week, perhaps with an email to the list, we can clarify this point for Marika and the rest of the group.
Okay, I'm willing to do that. James has his hand up.
Yeah, just real quickly, is this, I can't remember if this question or some variation on this theme was part of the registrar survey.
Yes, we certainly asked extensive questions about when does WHOIS change.
Okay, so there's multiple. We could receive a lot of.
We may
a lot more information.
Yes, and we certainly know there are examples of a variety of combinations of who has control and who is says and who has the ability of actually making changes, and they seem to be mixed and matched almost randomly. Helen.
Yeah, there seems to be some question as to why a registrant would want a domain deleted. Sometimes the registrant doesn't really understand what deleting a domain is. They just see a web page. I need to take that web page down because somebody's going to get mad at me, or I don't want this to see. But if you actually cancel their domain, they say, I paid for my domain for a year. Why is it canceled? So they don't really understand it. So you need to understand why this is happening. In the case of a legal situation, when there is a trademark situation, it does go to UDRP, so you can't really delete it. So if it's a thin registry, there's not much you can do except maybe put the domain on hold. You can't really change the whois unless you start putting words in under the name and say registrant has held this because the person wants to delete it. You can't put that as a name of it, so you pretty well have to leave it the way it is. Under a, you don't really want to be messing with the whois because you need to show who the original owner is. But the most important thing is that the web page is removed, that it's probably violating the copyright, and that the people who are complaining about the copyright know there's a process to go. If you were to delete the domain, then the domain will go through the whole redemption period and then may become available for somebody else to get.
Yeah.
So you need to resolve whether the domain is going to be transferred to the complainant. So it really has to stay active, although it may be under registrant hold or something to prevent a web page from showing up.
Yeah, I think the gist of this comment is if you look at it in reference to an example I sent out a few weeks ago, I'm not sure if you were on the list at that point, but it is archived, of a registrar, a reseller in this case, but that I don't think is relevant, whose contract says, upon expiry, we may change where your address points. We may or may not change the whois. So they were including the option that was within their rights up to have it point to a completely different site, and yet from the point of view of someone trying to enforce a UDRP, the original person is still the owner.
Yes, well, that
means and we know in cases that original person may no longer have control of the domain through their domain panel or whatever the mechanism is. So I think this comment is coming down to clarity of the how does whois reflect who is actually using the domain name.
But the whois still shows the person?
It may well.
I think we're kind of getting mixed up between actually putting a delete request for a domain name, which is quite different, and changing the status of the domain, or even changing what's displayed. I used to consider it a bad idea to change the domain name on expiration, but it's actually a good idea and sometimes change the web page that comes up to say this domain is expired so that people who haven't bothered changing their email address actually notice their domain is expired before it does go into deletion. So
I'm one of your supporters on that.
But we need a bit of clarification,
yeah,
because registrants don't really understand what cancellation of a domain name is and deletion of a domain name. It doesn't necessarily mean the same thing to them.
And in fact, people on this call sometimes use it in different terms.
And again, it's what should a registrar do in the whois record? Should we be changing the whois and saying this domain doesn't belong to this person anymore or just belongs to the registrar? Because when we're talking about whether the registrar should have control of the domain. So if a domain is expiring or if it might be transferred to somebody else, do we have the right to change the whois?
In my mind, ignoring the issue of the delete request, which confuses the issue even more, the fact that there is no clarity of who is controlling the domain name versus what is in whois is one of the issues that I think we should be speaking to before we finish. Marika, you had your hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika, because I just wanted to, in response to James' question, this specific question is not addressed in the registrar survey. It asks more, what happens to the whois data after expiration. It doesn't specifically ask what happens if the registrant requests the deletion, what happens to the whois data. That's maybe a question that would need to be added or clarified.
Marika, we don't use the term deletion, but we do explicitly say what happens if the registrant says they do not want the domain name anymore, which is not identical with deletion, but from the registrant's point of view, it is close.
Yes, correct, but I didn't interpret that as asking what happens to whois details, more an answer of, well, we treat it as an expired domain name or it's something completely different. So I'm not sure whether you'll get the detail.
But if it might be
a follow-up question.
If it's different, we ask for the full set of details, though. I think.
I don't think we do currently, but I can follow up on that.
I thought the question was worded such that if you don't treat it the same, then answer all the questions in number one. I thought that was in the draft. I may be wrong.
But is it if someone specifically requests that they don't want to renew it, not if they specifically request that they want to delete it.
That's correct. We do not use the term deletion. So we will not get answers with respect to deletion.
We only ask if a registrant specifically requests to delete a domain name prior to its expiration, does the registrar treat it as an expired domain name or is it treated differently?
Yes, I understand that.
Okay.
Anyone else on this one? We have about 5 minutes. I don't know whether we have time to do one full one. Let's try it and see if we can get it done in a minute or so, and if not, we will defer it till next time. Marika?
The next commenter proposes that a system could be explored that would link the duration of the auto-renew grace period to the duration of the registration, some kind of customer program.
So
that
if you pay
with the registrar, the more time you'll get to recover it following expiration.
I think it's saying the longer the name has been registered, not with any particular registrar. At least your summary says that.
Yes, but I don't recall if he made that specific in the comment, whether it could be for the duration of the registration or whether it was linked to a specific
registrar. It's suggesting that the time allowed to recapture it is variable, with more leniency being given to someone who's owned the domain name for a long time, and I recognize I just used the term owned. I think we can factor this in as under our deliberations. I don't think we need to debate the merits of it right now. We are 4 minutes before the hour. There is a call scheduled for next week, which I assume will be going on unless I hear otherwise. I would like to discuss whether we think there will be a call the following week. The following week is on the 20th, just prior to many of us getting on planes for Seoul. And the question is, given that we have different people on different weeks, do the people on this call think that we should schedule a call for the 20th or that we should cancel because many of you will not be there or will be too busy trying to clean up your office before leaving? Any opinions?
This is James. I would vote for not having a call on the 20th just because I'm going through the routine of transplanting myself somewhere else in the world. So.
Anyone else? That's certainly my inclination as well. But does anyone have any strong beliefs we should have the meeting then? No.
This is Marika. No
yeah.
strong views on whether to have a meeting or not, but it would be helpful if the group can make some time on its next meeting then to discuss what they would like to do in Seoul. So we can put some substance to the agenda and make sure the community knows what is going to be discussed in the meeting and who will be speaking.
You read my mind. That was exactly what I was going to say next.
Great.
And we'll do it before we start reviewing questions, not after, based on the rate we got through them today. Okay, there will be a meeting next week then. There will not be a meeting on the following week, on the 20th. Next week we will continue reviewing comments, but we will also talk about the session in Seoul first, and James has his hand up.
Hi, just very quickly, we might also either at the next meeting or the one in Seoul discuss how we handle November 3rd. I'm not sure everyone will be back or necessarily to that. That might also be sparsely attended.
Good point, James. I'll literally be in the air.
That serves you right for taking a vacation afterwards. That was tongue in cheek. Yes, I think we should put that on next week's agenda to consider. Marika.
Yeah, no, I just had one question on one of the other agenda items that we didn't cover on the status of additional constituency statements. Barry has already provided some feedback in Adobe Connect, but my question would be as well for the others that have not provided constituency statements, whether these are on the way and people need a bit more time, or whether we shouldn't wait for certain comments to come in. So far we've received comments from the registrar constituency, the IPC, well, the BC is working on it. So the question remains, are NCUC, ISPs, and what am I missing? The registries, are they planning to submit something?
Marika, unless I'm misreading something, we are not likely to be discussing those in any substance until at the very earliest November 10th.
That's correct.
And in fact, I will not be at the meeting on November 10th. But that perhaps is neither here nor there.
I won't be there either.
So we are talking about early or middle November before we're likely to do anything, and a week or so before that where you're going to have to summarize them. So
we'll give people an extension till then.
Although I'm not sure we need to formally give an extension, there is no tight deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
we should make sure that at least informally people understand that the boat will not have left if they get it in, but get it in a little bit later. If your belief is we need to give it a formal extension, we can again.
It might be worth telling those that, I can ask Glenn to contact the different constituencies just to let them know, because some might have given up on putting something together because they knew the deadline was, coming up so quickly. Maybe if they know they have a bit more time, they might be willing to put in the effort.
There's also a GNSO meeting this Thursday. Yes, I understand.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Cheryl was pointing out that both of us were late for another call now. I thank you all. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, guys.